Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized, and with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com, that's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome to the Whitetail Legacy Podcast. Coming in your ear holes another week, another episode. This week I talked with Jacob. Might upset some people in this episode, but I really enjoyed recording this one. We talk about the victim mentality and how sometimes people can get in their own head and decide that things are messing, their hunt up, their neighbors are messing it up, their gear's messing it up, instead of just going out there and putting in the work and moving forward. like I said, a lot of touchy subjects in this episode, but this is a difficult conversation, and a lot of times you're going to have that. But let's get into the people that make this possible getting into the show. If you guys do not know, Exodus came out with the Lift 4K. I'm going to read a little bit about that and get you guys in the know. So, the new Lift 4K is not your standard SD card camera. It's anything but standard. The Lift 4K Ultra was created with the elite trail cam user in mind. Dedicated dual image sensors allow for breathtaking photos and video quality by optimizing hardcore capabilities for both day and nighttime conditions. The native size 14 megapixel daylight dedicated image sensor is the largest to ever be used, providing astonishing photos with lower levels and the best video quality to ever come from a trail camera. So what that's basically saying, guys, is this is the biggest sensor that's ever been put in a camera. It's going to give you the best detailed pictures and absolute hands down best video ever. The native size 2 megapixel nighttime dedicated image sensor creates the largest pixel size to ever be used, combined with the match lens maximum light gathering capabilities for remarkable no glow images and videos. So not only are you getting something that is the best at daytime, it is the best at night. This camera is no joke. There is also some new things about it that are pretty badass. I think that a lot of other trail camera companies are going to pick up. The all-new 2S 2P power system leverages rechargeable 18650 cells that boost superior battery life with reducing the overall exposure of running trail cameras throughout its lifespan. With a runtime of over 540 minutes of 4K video, you'll enjoy months of use from a single charge and easily a full season in photo mode. So what these are they are a bigger battery pack that is powering this camera. No more lithium batteries. These are rechargeable as well. You can throw a new pack in there. You can take it home and recharge it, but you're going to be able to get 540 minutes of 4K video. So if you're running a 15-second video, guys, you're going to be able to get a shitload of time, as well as all-season picture, photo mode. And you're going to get it at, you know, that lithium where you know that you're getting the full power of that camera and nothing's faltering because it has low voltage or not enough power. The Lift series has been the cornerstone of Exodus since their inception almost 9 years ago, and you can experience the next generation of their flagship standard camera right now. There is a special code for my podcast if you guys would like to use it. Gonna save you some good money on this camera. I want to get it so I make sure I do not mess it up. And let me see. Make sure that it is what it is. The code is capital W, capital L, capital P, 4K. Now, with that code, that is going to save you $50 off of that camera. And this camera is still backed by that customer support, that warranty, you know, the 5-year no BS warranty. I've been using the trail cameras for 6 years now and have some to warranty this year. And I guarantee you that they're going to be a no questions asked. They're going to send me a new camera and I'm going to be in the good with cameras ready to run in the fall. So if you're looking for a new camera, this is the one. If you're looking for an SD card camera that's going to just blow you away, get those great videos that are absolutely crispy, this is the one. Next but not least, Rec Broadheads. If you guys are in the market for some broadheads, my code is still live there. I know it's early to buy, but if you buy them now, you don't have to worry about getting them later. Like always, appreciate you guys tuning in. Love you guys to death. Let's get into the show. All right, we got Jacob Sklinner on tonight. How you doing, brother?
Dude, I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing great. Glad you got to hop on. Appreciate you reaching out. And I kind of threw some shit out on an episode. I was like, hey, if you got something you want to talk about, difficult conversation, reach out. And you did that, just that. And this is definitely a conversation that needs to be had, one that I'm really happy to add to this series, because like I said, the main thing of this is to get people thinking about shit that needs to be thought about that maybe they don't. This is definitely a topic. But before we get into that, do a brief introduction of who you are and kind of what you do, and then we'll get into the goods.
Yeah, I'm a mechanical engineer by profession, and I guess my whole MO is I grew up wrestling. I wrestled in college, and I studied hard in college, obviously getting a mechanical engineering degree, and I combined working really hard with studying really hard and kind of put that into my whitetail game, and I'm just absolutely obsessed with whitetail hunting and as torn up as someone could possibly be about it. So I really like having an analytical approach and a hard-ass working approach is kind of like, I guess, who I am in a nutshell.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm the same way of more of just like, I can outwork the next dude to get this done, or at least have an opportunity. Cause sometimes it just comes down to getting an opportunity, you know, that's a win, you know, maybe the buck was 55 and you couldn't get a shot or something, but damn, you were there. Like you put the work in to get on that, you know, ghost. To not kind of beat around the bush, let's kind of dig into why you came to the show and what we want to talk about here.
Oh, you cut out for a second.
Yeah, you're still there. You're good.
Okay, good. Can you repeat that last?
So we're done beating around the bush here. Let's get into why you came to the show and kind of talk about the victim mentality approach that me and you see a lot of hunters doing over the last. It seems like the last 4 or 5 years, it's really picked up, as what I'm seeing. But that's kind of where I've been following more hunting content in general. But let's dig into it, man. What you got to say?
Yeah. So, I mean, the way that I've always been raised and the way that I approach things in life, and this is especially taught through wrestling, is that you have to take accountability for your failure. Like there's a lot of people, I'm not even to get on the topic of other people yet, but essentially like when you fail, if it wasn't something that you could control, then there's no solution. And so the worst thing to me is when it's a failure that I'm blaming something else for. And that just makes me straight up depressed because like that means that I can't work my ass off and I cannot succeed. If the failure is happening because of something outside of my control and I truthfully can't control it. Now, what that really means is all failure is within your control. Like if I were to lose a match because the ref made a terrible call, it's my fault for making that match within a ref's range of impact. I should have opened the score up more and I should have got out in front so that it didn't matter what the ref thought. I was clearly scoring and I clearly won that match. Like I could have pinned the guy in the first 20 seconds. I should have practiced harder. Like it always comes down to something that you did in almost every area in life that you could have taken accountability for. And even if you come down to the determination that it really was out of your control, it's almost always that there's some kind of factor that you had influence over that would have completely changed the outcome. And so for me, it's always really important for me to take accountability for coming up short. And that is absolutely part of hunting, in my opinion. Like, obviously, there's a bit of luck that comes down to like the last few moments where you're getting a shot on a deer, or if you make a clean shot, and there can be equipment failure. But I feel like in every situation, like, let's say, you know, your rest gets knocked loose on the way in. Well, you weren't inspecting your gear when you got in the stand. Like, there's so many different things that you could have done to even prevent what most people consider the most out of your control situation, which is a faulty bow. So I would say that, like, whenever I've failed in hunting and whenever I failed in wrestling and in school and in my job, it has always been my thought to take responsibility for that, because that means that I can get to fixing it. And a lot of people like to play the blame game and blame this and that and this and other things, and they spend more time trying to decide what went wrong and who's responsible for it than actually just admitting fault and fixing the problem. Whether they deserve that fault or not, you know, who cares? It doesn't really matter. If you're secure in who you are, you should be able to admit fault and just start moving forward. So I guess that's kind of like establishing it, but really where that plays into hunting and quote unquote the victim mentality is, like, there are so many people that blame certain products, hunting educational content, people that encourage public land hunting and encourage others to enjoy the resources that they pay taxes on, that they use that as a crutch for why they failed. And, you know, I know there's going to be a lot of people that are pretty upset about anyone saying this, but, you know, I can understand the argument to the side that if it made hunting impossible in your area, i.e. it killed all the deer, like if you do not have a deer to hunt, and it won't be sustainable in the future because this has such an insane impact, then I can understand, you know, you not appreciating that regulation. But the fact of the matter is, like, a lot of the things that guys complain about statistically aren't playing the impact that they claim. Like, a lot of people claim that cell cams are just going to destroy their population. And you look at the periods in which cell cams became legal in certain areas and illegal in certain areas, and the harvest statistics are the same. And there's just a lot of different cases of things like that. And I think regardless of what the impact of that thing is, people use those things, like, just to throw out stuff. And I know so many guys are going to be pissed, like crossbows, or I use traditional archery, I don't use a compound, or, you know, cell cams are bad, or cameras are bad, or this and that. They use it as a reason for why they failed, and they can write off any mistakes they made because of those crutches. And I feel like in that situation, those people are just kind of playing the victim and pointing to, like, the 1% of abusers of those products and using them as their everyday example for the reason that they couldn't succeed in that situation. And I'm not going to say it's an easy thing to do. Like, it's hard to admit that it's your fault, you failed. And it's really easy to point to a lot of the other things for why you did fail. But I feel like that's when we're doomed, is when we just write off all responsibility, because then we have no control over where this is going.
Yeah, I agree with you. One thing that I wanted to point out that was, you know, kind of wasn't on your list that I see that's probably going to offend a lot of people, but I even have friends that do this. Like, they say they love hunting and they're out there, they want to enjoy it, but it's a 160 or nothing. And they get to a point where they can't kill that 160. Maybe they don't want to have one on their farm that year, so they just don't hunt. They're like, oh, neighbor killed a buck last year, I ain't got shit to hunt. Like, it's so much of a problem that it's all or nothing. It's a big buck or nothing. I'm not even going to enjoy hunting at all because I don't have the opportunity to kill a 160. Yeah. It's just like, you know, there's a point where there's that victim mentality is, okay, you don't have it, well, go find it. Or go talk to the neighbor. Or, I mean, if that's going to ruin your whole entire year, or the thing that kills me, like I've mentioned on an episode ago, like the guy that won't gun hunt, right? You only compound hunt. You're not a gun hunter. Completely fine. But then the neighbor kills your buck during gun season, and you weren't out there hunting because you will not gun hunt. That buck was up in daylight running around, and the first thing they go is, oh, damn gun hunters, got him, you know, got the buck. Like, did he work as hard for you on that deer? No. Could you have hunted that day and possibly killed that deer? Yes. Like, there's a victim mentality there where you kind of got to pick your lines where you fall.
And there's a whole nother side to that too, is like, I mean, there's so many people that are so fixated on the outcome. Like, they're so obsessed with, did they kill that deer? Or like, they judge the whole season on what fell on the ground or didn't fall on the ground that season. And it's like, especially people that are hunting public land, or let's include knock on door permission, like high pressure permission, or even let's say you have a lease, there's 100 guys on it, whatever. You know, if you're in hunting in general, let's say, and you are fixated on the outcome, like, you're just not going to last. Like, I mean, those guys will be so destroyed that they didn't kill that deer. And they're, you know, of course, using the methods that they desire, which is fine. But you can't be pissed off when someone then kills it using the method that you promise yourself that you're not going to use. Like, that's the territory that you're choosing to be in. If you're not going to hunt during gun season because you deem it unsafe or unethical, and you're not going to hunt with a gun, like, that's perfectly fine. That's up to you. But you can't be upset when someone else goes and takes advantage of their legal given right and kills that deer. And like, you have to be in the sport for more than just the kill. You have to be in it to like enjoy the process. And if you're not willing to even go through that process and you're complaining about that you didn't have that enjoyment, that I just feel like you don't have much of a place in the sport if you're not going to enjoy the work that goes into it.
Everybody's trying to kill the big buck, but it don't happen all the time. And
for sure.
And then the guy that does kill it, whether it's, let's say he did kill it with a bow, but you hear, oh, this guy don't hunt till the rut. He don't hunt. He don't do anything. He just gets his bow out and, you know, shoots it a couple times and goes out. But he killed it, you know, kills it with a bow. They're less of a hunter than that guy. They killed it with a gun. They're less of a hunter than that guy. And like you said, the end thing is just is causing division between everybody. And it's like where everybody hangs their hat is, you know, we're going to get into that in a little bit, but where everybody hangs their hat kind of draws a line in the sand where you have to decide if you like this guy or you don't like this guy. But things else is like the amount of content that's out right now, whether it's podcast, YouTube, anything like that. It's like, if you decide that you can't fix yourself or can't better yourself, there has never been an easier time to learn about whitetail hunter than now in the whole entire history of hunting. Yep. Like right now, if you started out, you would be years, 50, 60, 70 years ahead of the guys that had nothing, where their grandpa was telling them that, you know, buck scent works in, you know, September. Like, you know, like my grandpa still thinks that he still puts scrapes out like early as shit, like with hot doe estrus in them, like because that's what his dad taught him. Like he just doesn't. They don't learn like we learn, you know. And one other thing is when I did a bunch of research because I kind of did a crossbow for youth episode about when the compound bow was released and like the amount of hatred that came from the trad bow hunters or the recurve hunters, they thought compound bows were going to completely annihilate the deer herd. They thought it was over. You guys are going to ruin them. You're going to kill all the big bucks. It's going to be too easy to go kill deer. And that's what you're, you know, getting into, like the cell cam argument, you know, the sticking to one brand argument, the being a gun hunter, not being a gun hunter argument. Everybody thinks that it's going to have such a negative impact, but they don't ever do anything to try to change it. They just bitch about it and don't go anywhere. You know?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think the thing is like there's some truth to some of these arguments, you know? And to that I say, who gives a shit? Like Yeah, it's harder. I don't care what anyone says. It's harder to kill a deer nowadays than it used to be because there's all the same tools. Everyone has access to elite mapping, which is crazy, crazy valuable. Like, I have a crappy little drone. There's a whole bunch of people. Every time I film B-roll on my channel, it's private land that I have permission to film on for using my drone. So I don't want to give away anyone's spots or anything like that. And I wouldn't even fly a drone above public land. But it's hilarious when I record with the, and again, this is not a thermal drone, but whatever. It's a crappy, tiny little DJI Mini 3 drone. And the aerial imagery can see trails 100 times better than that drone. And the drone, I don't have like where it is relative to a map. So like people comment on my crap whenever they see like drone footage and they're like, I bet you use that to scout. And I'm like, no, because I don't give a shit about killing a deer. Like, I care about my experience and I'm robbing myself of that experience. And this is already a terrible tool for it. Now, thermal drone, totally different thing. Drone that can see itself relative on the map. Drone that can fly a few miles away, totally different thing.
Yeah,
But it's just
that's
like
level
hunting
shit.
has evolved so much. Like, we have so many more resources, and it means that it's harder. It is absolutely harder for someone to kill a buck of their choice, because you, first off, you have a buck of your choice generally nowadays, because there's all these resources on learning. You're going to get a picture of a target buck, or if you don't use cameras, you're probably going to find a way to glass them up. You're going to find tracks and rub, and you're going to know that you're holding out for a certain deer. So already you're setting yourself with some harder criteria, and there's more pressure per acre. People are doing more damage per acre because they're covering more ground. And in general, there's just better technology for everyone to see the exact same thing. So people can get a lot further, a lot quicker. And so all of that into account, it doesn't matter. Like, that's not a reason to complain. That's just a reason to say, hell yeah, this got harder. And when I beat everyone else out here and I kill the deer that I'm going after, and I know for a fact 10 other guys are going after, just like the deer I killed this year in Wisconsin, like, then it will taste that much sweeter. It's not, it does not matter whether how hard it is. It really doesn't. Unless it's absolutely like, unless deer are going to be extinct in 10 years from your area. Like, that's when it matters, and that's when some more regulation needs to come into play. But like, when you're complaining about something that is possible and you care more about complaining about it than you do finding a way to succeed, that's just sad to me. That it gets me excited that deer hunting's hard. It gets me excited that I get to be one of those guys that's out there chasing deer, and I'm fine with not succeeding. Yeah, it's gonna suck, but it's okay to fail. Like, it's a good thing to fail. I would have a grind of a season and learn a lot of stuff, and if I didn't have a deer on the wall at the end of the year, like, that's fine. That's not why I do this, and I, to the point where we're talking about all this technology, why it's kind of irking me a little bit, it's bothering me, is because so many people advocate for the banning of technology that they don't agree with. That isn't showing, I'll put the asterisks on here, that isn't showing a statistical correlation between a large reduction in deer herd. So there are very few locations that you can point to the introduction of cell cameras. And again, you can't isolate this variable very well. So like, that wasn't in the conjunction of introduction of more tags or crossbows or one other variable or something that might impact the deer herd as well. But very rarely, if not ever, can you point to the introduction of cell cameras and your deer herd significantly being reduced. And actually, it goes the opposite direction in a lot of areas of, at least that I hunt, because people are more selective. But right, all that aside, any opinion, any statistic on cell cams aside, I think the really destructive things that happening is we're advocating for the government to take away our freedoms and regulate this thing that very few people actually understand that are within the power to change laws. We're advocating for them to restrict our freedoms in the thing that should be the most left up to the people and the constituents that actually take place in it. Like, we're asking them to take away our right to use cameras and other stuff on public land. And it's the same thing as the gun control argument. When people are like that cell camera, that this guy got a picture of a buck at a bait pile and drove out to his property or walked out his back door and went up there and shot the thing, that's like the very niche 1%, the guy that blankets public land and 50 cell cameras. That's like the very, very niche 1% of users. And that's the exact same argument that many people that obviously a lot of hunters are pro-gun, pro-2A, like that's the exact same argument that's used against them when you see someone that was mentally deranged and shot up a school or, you know, shot someone. That's the same argument that is used against you that everyone hates so much, but you're using it to advocate for the government to take away your freedoms. And it's, again, you're just opening the door for them to step their foot in and say, hey, maybe we can grab some more ground here. Or maybe that we don't think they're using this public land very much. And so all these people are advocating. Instead, they're not trying to advocate for studies to see what the true impact of cell cameras is. They're not advocating for studies to see what the impact of crossbows are. They're not advocating for the impact of bait. They're not advocating for all these controversial topics and technologies to be actually studied so they can have an understanding for it. They're asking the government to, instead of having a feel for what it really is, regulate their freedom and take it away. And they're saying, just take it. Like, we don't want it because it'll make it easier for me to kill a deer. It's so sad that people are so fixated on the outcome instead of the process that they would willingly let an agency that's known for destroying a lot of great things and natural resources to have more regulation over their sport.
I agree. And one thing that just I cannot stand for some reason is the cell cam argument. I know there's both sides of the fence. I'm pro cell cam for multiple reasons. Has it helped me kill bucks? Yeah, I would say probably. I mean, I've got intel that I maybe would have got earlier, but I cannot stand when, say, someone from Illinois makes a post and it's about someone from Texas that killed a deer with a cell cam. I'm like, why? How does that affect you in any form, fashion, or way? You have no idea what his situation was. You have no idea, but the same day, Drury Outdoor can kill a deer and they're holding a cell cam out in front of the picture. No one calls them out. No one calls the big dogs out because they're scared. But they can call some random guy out from freaking Texas that killed a buck, you know, got a picture of him, you know, we'll go into this bedding area. You know, I went in there and was able to kill him in the evening coming out with a doe. Like, okay, you're in Texas. How does that affect me? But this guy, like, I'm advocating that I don't like these. I'm going to share this guy's story on my Instagram and kind of bash him, but I won't bash a well-known guy that's reaching thousands of people for using the cell cam. I won't do it because you don't want the hate from that, but you're willing to get the little bit from this random guy in Texas. Because there's probably a few people that are going to agree with you and go, but you're not going to call out the big dog that's promoting. And it's the same thing with the guns, you know. You got a guy like you that's standing on the, you know, the fences screaming like, hey, we need to not do this. You get a big guy to say that, there's going to be 1,000 people behind him. You know, it's just, it's weird how that is. And it literally drives me crazy. But kind of the same way like you, when a guy has to figure out a reason why he's not successful. Last year, I hit a buck in the shoulder. I told everybody right off the bat, made a bad shot, hit him in the shoulder. It's my own fault. I didn't let it ruin my season, but that it was 110% my fault. The buck didn't make me hit him in the shoulder. It wasn't the broadhead's fault. It wasn't my bow's fault. It was me in the situation that I put myself in that day. Like, I made the choice to take the shot. You know, it was 100% me. And, you know, the deer is still alive. It ended kind of the best way it could other than finding the deer. You know, the deer is healthy, fine. But, like, a lot of guys have been like, oh, you know, wind was blowing. You know, he was spooked long ways out there. And, you know, I couldn't, you know, it was a little light. And, I mean, there's just 3,000 excuses coming up other than, yeah, I messed up and shot him right in the shoulder. Literally in my video, when I released the arrow, you can hear me say fuck. I'm like, ah, oh, fuck. Like, like in the GoPro video, you can see it go down. Like, I'm like, ah, oh, fuck. And I knew it right when I released. I'm like, shit. I felt my front hand grab. And I was like, oh, it's going left. Like, I shoot left-handed. I'm right-eye dominant, but I shoot left-handed. You grab with your front hand. What way is your bow going to drift? You know, right. You know, and it drifted, and I was right away. I was like, before it even hit the deer, I was like, up. Oh, I messed. I either missed him or I hit him way forward. Like I already knew. It's, like I said, you just got to kind of own it and not make excuses. To put yourself, because you're not helping yourself at all when you do that. Like you said, you're not figuring out what you can do. Like I need to go shoot my bow more at that yardage. You know, like
right.
I need to figure out, am I really comfortable at that yardage? Do I feel good about it? Like in that situation, would I take that shot again? And that's something you need to figure out before you get put in that situation again. And if you're thinking, oh, I had all these excuses, nothing's ever going to line up perfectly the way it did the last time. And then it happens and you're in that situation and you haven't put any pressure on yourself to fix it, then you're going to mess up again, you know?
Right. And honestly, like, I just feel like the moment that you say it couldn't be my fault or it had to be external, like you just off the possibility of you solving the problem then. And like, I mean, you think of every situation, like the deer dropped insanely. You probably should have read that deer's, its body signals better. You probably should have read its behavior better and understood how that deer was going to react. And if you don't have the expertise for that, you probably should have spent more time in the woods beforehand. Or the deer caught a bad gust of wind. Well, you probably should have set up in a different spot. You couldn't set up in a different spot. Well, maybe you should have set up on the ground or not been shooting in that situation. Like there's all sorts of other things. And like, I just think it's always important to take accountability. I mean, I am a big advocate for ownership and like, I learned a lot from reading Jocko Willink's book, actually Extreme Ownership.
Yeah.
And listening to a lot of the stuff he says, but like just, it shows a lot of security to be able to take ownership for those things. And I think it's just really important to always be able to do that. And so I feel like, you know, there's two sides to every argument. You know, there's the side of the people that might want regulations and they will bitch about like cell cams are bad, X is bad, Y is bad, Z is bad. And they might be right, but what are they doing to solve it? The same way we could just bitch about, hey, these people keep complaining and blah, blah, blah. And we could just be bitching about it and just be complainers the same way. But, you know, what we would like to do to solve this and what would be nice for people to do to solve this is if we actually came together as a group of hunters and decided to actually put in the time to research ourselves. If we had the ability to influence our natural resource departments to, hey, it would be advantageous for us to understand all these factors that we are regulating, whether we have, you know, X amount of bows or a doe season or, you know, any kind of variable, we should do some kind of study on it once we put it into effect and give it a 5-year time period on whether we think this is a negative or positive impacting thing and isolate that variable. And so, like, I feel like it's a fairly low effort thing to record the details of a kill in a more detailed way than a lot of state surveys are doing. And when you involve that, you get an immediate correlation between weaponry and, you know, the use of cameras and other things like that, between that and how many deer were killed. And I feel like that's a very important thing to keep track of. And so, like, there's a lot of things we can do to solve these problems. It's not like it's that hard of a thing to track and record, but when either side of this argument just complains and talks about their opinion, it gets nothing done. And part of the thing that frustrates me a lot is when you hear the argument that you shouldn't spread hunting, like you shouldn't encourage future generations to hunt because there's already such a high capacity of hunters, and hunting should be exclusively for the people that already care about it a lot and are lead to it because our public lands are getting more crowded. And I feel like that is such a ridiculously selfish mentality that this is getting hard for me and it's difficult for me to do. So I don't want other people to do it so it can be easier for me. Like how much of a wimp mentality is that? That just, I mean, I can imagine if I said that to my dad, like, you know, I think this guy should quit for my wrestling club because it's harder for me to have a starting position because this guy's better at it than me. Or I should reduce the amount of wrestlers in our club by half because there's already so many and I'd have to compete so hard for a position. Like I would get my ass kicked. Like I'd be sleeping outside for a week if I said that. Like, and I just can't understand how people reach adulthood and hold that mentality when the obvious solution is to be acquiring more public land, to proactively form groups that try to acquire new land and protect the lands we have. Like, why would we go as a group on the offensive towards one another, start calling each other out and dividing each other, telling another grown man they can and can't do something, instead of coming together and forming the strong bond that hunters have, like, as a very unique niche community? Like, we are fantastic at advocating for what we care about when we put our mind to it. I feel like it'd be so much more productive to come together as hunters and advocate for, at the worst, like a board of legislation, like a board of representatives that are made of hunters, are made of well-versed, well-researched hunters that could have some say in how voting goes, or at least gives clarity to other hunters. Like you saw in the preseason this year, there was, like, I believe 9 laws that were going to pass in Iowa that were strongly advocated against. And there's a few guys, I cannot remember the name for the life of me right now, but they basically put together an organization to make hunters aware of what bills were going to pass, something that could hurt their freedom, and by proxy made everyone more aware of it, even the public. And pretty much everything that was put in place that would harm hunting, they got shot down. And it was just such a non-cost kind of thing that, like, imagine if we, you know, put our heads together for something more productive. I feel like we'd be just a fantastic force in that. But I just, you know, as of right now, as an individual, I don't have the power to do that. But there's so many people that have a say in this. And there's so many people that have a large group that don't advocate for that and have the power to change many minds and bring people together, and they don't do it. And it just baffles me. It's like they don't care about if their grandkids are ever going to be able to do this.
Yeah,
you know?
I had a skip on from Iowa Whitetail from episode 325, and he's part of that.
That might be the one that I'm thinking of too.
Association. He's really big. He goes to the state Senate all the time and speaks on behalf of these laws.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Ones and the bad ones. He's very well spoken. If anybody's interested in that, that episode's great. He kind of dives into kind of what they're trying to pass. And it's surprising, like, what they try to slip in there. Like, you know, an big outfitting company goes to these people that kind of can put laws in to get maybe passed that year, and they pay them off and say, hey, try to sneak this on the ballot and see if we can get it passed this year. You know, and he said that's what's happening in these states. You know, a company wants to come out with a product. Hey, let's see if we can make this legal this year so we can sell a whole bunch of these. Kind of what happens. And like you said, we don't really know anything about it. We want to be advocates for it. We want to get involved, but we don't know how, for one, and we don't know what's going on. So it's hard to be in the game, you know, when you don't really know how to play the game. So The division in hunting, like you mentioned, it's always been there, even in the content form. Like, I remember when I started podcasting, there was other podcasts that were extremely mean to me, like really rude, didn't want me to be there. And I've never turned down anybody. I've helped out multiple people. Because the more advocates that put out content, the better it's going to let hunters all across the nation be, the better off we're going to be. You know, in my theory, the more educated hunters you have out there wanting to kill big bucks, in theory, seems like there's going to be less big deer, right? But in reality, in my mind, there's going to be more big deer because there's going to be.
You're managing for big deer at that point.
They know if they have property, they're doing small steps to get there. If they're on public, they're not educating deer as much because they kind of know what to do a little bit. And they're passing smaller deer because they want to kill older age class deer. Like, it's a win-win-win for everybody. And to kick people off or to say, like, they don't want the competition, but if everybody was a better hunter, there would be more big bucks to hunt. Would there be more big bucks killed? Yes, but there would also be more big bucks out there because people wouldn't be settling for those younger age class deer, and they'd be passing deer, and they'd, like you said, they'd be, it would be like, I'm the same level as this guy. He's going after this age class buck. Why can't I? You know, like, it's just going to be, everybody's going to be out there hunting the same deer, and that's kind of what happens around here. Like, there, everybody thinks that there's a big one, and that's like another thing about cell cams is, well, we don't want people to know what's on the public land. Like, do you know how many people know if there's a giant buck? There's like a shitload of people that know.
Oh yeah, like, I mean, I had 20 people send me pictures. Like, it was either 20 or 21 people send me pictures of the deer I shot in Wisconsin this year.
Yeah,
like, it's just and nuts. It was a nice buck, but it's not like it was a 170. Like, it was a like mid to high 150s. But, like, I mean, there's bigger bucks out there, and people were just sending me pictures of that left and right, telling me they knew right where it was. And it's like, those people, I think like 3/4 of them held out the entire year without killing a deer because they saw that one. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and honestly, like, I agree with you completely. I think part of the problem too is our public lands are generally managed to for hikers. It seems like in a lot of areas of Wisconsin, at least, like, it's managed to increase the ability for someone to recreate extremely far. There's lots of logging trails and things like that. They tear down bedding areas and all stuff because it's hard for people to walk through, you know, like, especially in Western Wisconsin, they sell certain chunks of land. They build towers on them and all sorts of crap like that.
Yeah, I've been up on some of your stuff when I worked up there, and it's like, I'm like, I'm never gonna find a shed out here because literally everybody's walked. Like, you can get to everything. Like, there might be little dense pockets of like cedars and stuff, but not a lot.
And it, like, from a hunter's perspective, like, obviously it provides a challenge because there's access to every area of the land, and that's like. For me, when I hunted in Western Wisconsin, like, that was cool. Like, I was happy to do it. I killed a buck every year of 5, except for one I held out. Or I actually killed one during gun season that year. So I guess every year I killed one or multiple bucks out there. And it was like, it was a cool challenge, you know, and I got to cut my teeth and learn a lot about deer. And I got to have a longer season because I didn't just kill one right away. And I gained a lot of experience because of it. But the sad part of it is like, this land that is, you think about the funding for public lands. It happens through people that pay for the state parks passes. It happens to people even more so. Like, all that funding happens through people that hunt the lands, that are constantly visiting it, donating to it, the people that buy tags, the people that pay for licenses out there instead of a 10 buck a year state park stamp or 30 bucks a year state park stamp. Like, that's how these public lands get funded. And then they take that funding that's 80 to 90% from hunters and conservation efforts started by hunters, and then use that land to benefit the 10% of donations from hikers. And it's just kind of asinine. And there's plenty of public land, I'm sure, in many states and maybe even in Wisconsin too, that's managed by the DNR specifically to increase deer habitat and provide hunters with better resource. I'm sure it exists somewhere. I've seen far fewer examples of it. But that it just is, it makes an even stronger case for, i.e., a survey, like something where hunters can say, hey, this is a survey that's going to be taken seriously. While there's plenty of surveys out there, this is a survey that's going to be taken seriously where your say will have an impact. And this is what you see. Even better, I think, is we need kind of a representative republic made up of hunters so that we can affect our own regulations and legislation on a local level, so that we can have an elected board of officials that has experience in public lands, has experience with deer hunting, and can help each other out, or at least give clarity as an intermediate to what a larger board of people that is, aren't educated about hunting are trying to push through.
Yeah, and I just think that's I don't know why they can't do that as like a, you know, like tag sales are per county.
Like, well, they've tried doing that before. I mean, like,
why can't they have kind of a representative, couple representative for each county that can mm-hmm. kind of say, hey, this is what we need to do. One thing that they do here that I absolutely cannot stand is, you know, we have the gun seasons, right? And then we have that late doe mm-hmm. season. I don't know if you're familiar with it. But if you if you have a tag for that county, so say like Knox or Henderson, say Henderson County, you have a tag for that county, right? And now it's, you didn't kill a buck, so it's a doe tag. Or maybe you have a doe tag. Well, they open up to public lands to everybody to go fill that tag. So now you have literally 30, 40 guys out there during that weekend, maybe more, that have a tag to kill a doe. And you're talking late, late January. There's probably already bucks that have dropped antlers. Maybe there's bucks getting shot as well. But still, just the amount of deer that are killed on those public lands, and there's so few of them in my area. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you were one county and maybe you had, like, you know, 8, 10, 12,000, couple different parcels, but when you have two that's open or one that's open, and you say, yeah, if you got a doe tag, you can go out there. Like, you are obliterating the deer population on there for nothing, just to get for people to fill tags so people are happy, I guess. You know, I don't know.
Right. And this is where we get into a good point, is where to draw the line where we do involve regulation, you know, because like, obviously, you know, unfortunately, there's not much research besides kill statistics with a certain weapon at a certain time of the year, because that all goes with registering the deer. But obviously there's people that argue that those aren't accurate anymore because of online registration, stuff like that. But that's our best feel for statistics. Okay. I think the whole point of having a conversation ever about certain factors that influence the deer herd is, where do you draw the line? And you start to have to advocate for regulation when it reduces your ability to do that in the future. So like, if we didn't analyze what was going on, or we didn't advocate for change and do something proactively, we'd just be guys sitting around a campfire bullshitting like everyone has for the last 80-100 years, you know? And I think that it's really important for us to not just say that X is bad, but say like, okay, how much of an impact does it have? And how much of it needs to change in order to make this sustainable for the future? And so, you know, in the case of doe seasons in Wisconsin, late doe season in Wisconsin, we have a 9-day gun season. So many deer get killed in that 9-day gun season. We have a muzzleloader season that follows after, a fair amount get killed during that. And then we have holiday hunts in very, very much of the state where it's basically rifle season for antlerless only. Plenty of bucks accidentally get killed. And again, there's god-awful statistics on how many bucks get killed. And there's a lot of misquoting about how many bucks actually get killed in that season too. But still, you're putting a large damage on the population during that time. And so something like that, let's say if we saw a statistic correlation where, like, you know, our deer herds are getting reduced by 10% during that period, let's say, during those holiday hunt weekends and stuff. If we cut that, having 10% more deer compounding year after year, especially after those does have been fertilized, like after those does have been bred and they're probably pregnant, like that makes a very, very big impact year after year. But we never take the time to try to regulate that on a local level. We don't, it's either we toss it all in the control of the government, or, you know, we don't change anything at all. We don't advocate for anything at all. So I think it's really important that us as hunters come together and seize the opportunity to represent ourselves, you know? And again, this is, unfortunately, I wish I could freaking do something tomorrow about this. Because if I knew how to change this, I would be doing it tomorrow. But I'm kind of just giving out a cry for help. It's like, there's people out there that have enough impact that, you know, the government would hear them. Legislators would hear them. You know, that we are a big enough force in each of our states and in the entire U.S. to advocate to control ourselves. We are a big enough force, and we can be loud enough. But it's not going to be any one individual person that makes this big impact. And I think the path to being sustainable, and at least at worst, understanding these factors that influence our future in hunting, is just recording the data and having a solid way of understanding the impact of each variable. And if we cry anything, I don't think it should be take this away or X away or Y away, or take away cell cams, take away crossbows, only trad season, limited crossbow season, no baiting, all this crap. I think any of those things may make a change, but I think the number one thing we should allocate for is, let us learn what actually makes a difference and let us have control over making the changes. That's what we need. We absolutely need as a hunting community is to come together, put our differences aside, and earn ourselves control that we should be able to attain.
I like that, man. That's, like you said, that's the best way to wrap this up. It, you know, understanding that something needs changed is the first thing, and then figuring out how to do it is the second thing. But if you're not talking about it, you know there's a problem. But, you know, that same thing with me. It's like, you want to have an impact, and you have ideas, but where do you go with your ideas? It's just like you don't have an outlet. There's someone out there that knows, though. You know, they just need to reach out. So hopefully they'll reach out to one of us and say, hey, this, you know, this is where you would want to go to give your ideas or be a part of this. Because there's guys out there fighting for the same stuff that we want to fight for, but there is also guys out there fighting to ban this and ban that and do this. And like you said, the main thing is, let's better the hunting before we ban shit. And if we do find something that is a problem, oh, cell cams are wrecking, you know, the buck population. Maybe we should think about it. Yeah. But if you don't have the data other than just what you see online, you know, of people sharing, like you said, you're probably getting a half of a percent of the users of what's actually going on. You know, it's like,
right. It's
just like I always say on Facebook, you see during hunting season, you see, you know, all these bucks getting killed. That's probably a half a percent of the deer that actually get killed. You know, it's like,
right.
It's just crazy how many are out there, big deer out there getting killed and no one ever knows about. So, but I really appreciate you coming on, dude, and chatting about this. Like I said, this is something that people needed to hear on both sides, you know, the victim mentality side and the divisions in hunting, when the end goal is for everybody to have a good hunt, right? That's what everybody wants. Yep. They want to enjoy the hunt, whether you are successful or not. You want to have a fun time out there and you want to enjoy the sport. And like you said, dividing it up and saying these guys are wrong or these guys are wrong or this company's fault or it's this product's fault, that ain't the right way to do it until you get some data and you can kind of sift through it and say, okay, this is a problem.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing for us to do, like because I guess we went about this in a pretty great order, in my opinion. Like, like the number one thing we can do is take account, set your goals. Like, I think all of our goals should be to allow future generations to be able to hunt above anything else. Like, I don't care about a year-to-year kill for me. Like, I'd sacrifice 20 years of killing so that my kids can hunt someday, you know? Like, I think the first thing we need to do is we need to release the outcome and take care of the hard work that needs to take place and admit that some of this is our fault in any respect, and we still have control over our ability to succeed. Once you admit that we still have control over what you can succeed, of what it takes to succeed, then you can fight for it and you can make a change. Now, we need to come together as hunters and stop dividing ourselves so that we have the power to make a difference. And then we need to advocate for the right things that will allow us to take control of this as a group and start to have our own regulation over it once we've, of course, you know, gained clarity on what's actually making a difference in our sport. So we need to just stop blaming other things for our failure, come together, figure out what's actually causing you know, the inability to continue this hobby in the future, and then make a difference, make a change.
Yeah, I mean, and it, I mean, you're looking, you know, at a giant outcome, but it could be as simple as like, what if I, you know, instead of the, you know, this neighbor that I don't like that kills bucks, he guns hunts, I don't like gun hunting, what if I just go have a conversation with the guy and say, hey, yes. I got grandkids that are going to hunt one day. What can we do to make sure that you have a good time, I have a good time? And if it's any reasonable guy and they look at it, this mentality of saying, okay, maybe I do have some faults. Maybe I am doing some things wrong. You know, maybe I shouldn't judge this guy for the way he hunts. You can make an impact in your area right now, like
yeah.
tomorrow. Like you could text your neighbor and say, hey, I'm tired of this, you know, shit where we're both trying to kill the, you know, the same buck. We're not really communicating and shit. You don't have to tell each other what's going on, but let's make it more about making the hunt good for both of us instead of trying to screw the other guy. And I feel like that's a lot of what's going on.
Yeah, 100%, man. It starts on an individual level for sure. And just being friends with your fellow outdoorsmen, taking an experienced person hunting or something like that, and just showing them in general, like that people are still kind in this world. Cause unfortunately all we see is the abnormal cases in the media where it's news because it's irregular. Like someone was an a-hole, you know, like we should just show each other that we can be kind, try to pass on the thing we love, and find a way to make it sustainable in the future.
I agree 100%. Great way to end it, brother.
Yeah. Thank you.
Join Captain Justin Leake and Meredith McCord for the best fishing action along Panama City Beach. Tune in to Chasing the Sun every Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Oh, my God!
Every once in a while, it's fun to go with, like, just full-blown redneck on these fish.
This is like high-tech cane pole fishing right here.
From the white sandy beaches to the crystal blue waters, enjoy the best fishing Panama City Beach has to offer during Chasing the Sun. Sundays at 9:30 a.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.